Hiring isn't just about finding someone willing to take the job. You need the right person with the right background who can move your business forward. If you want candidates who truly match what you're looking for, trust Indeed Sponsored Jobs. With Indeed Sponsored Jobs, your post stands out to quality candidates who actually fit the role. According to Indeed data, 90% are more likely to be hired and trusted by 1.6 million companies. Spend more time interviewing candidates who check all your boxes. Less stress, less time, more results. Now with Indeed Sponsored Jobs. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to help your job get the premium status it deserves at Indeed.com/podcast13. Just go to Indeed.com/podcast13 right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/podcast13. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Do it the right way with Indeed.
Welcome back to the Bonfire Podcast, where we talk about the UFC and mixed martial arts with those closest to the fight game. I am your host, longtime MMA reporter and MMA junkie senior reporter, Mike Bond. It is UFC 323 Fight Week this Saturday in Las Vegas. I will be there. Dvalishvili versus Yan 2, Pantoja versus Van, three former champions on the main card, some solid prelims. This is a pretty good event to close out the 2025 pay-per-view numbered event schedule, the last pay-per-view of the ESPN era in the United States, off to Paramount in 2026. And we got the first headliners for the 2026 schedule. Dana White announcing on Thanksgiving UFC 324, UFC 325. Of course, one of the big notable fights from there was the interim lightweight title fight between Justin Gaethje and Paddy Pimblett, a plethora of other bouts announced. I reacted to that almost immediately after with Dean Thomas. If you didn't see that, you can go check out the reaction on the YouTube channel or any of the podcast feeds if you want the audio. I thought kind of some good stuff there for immediately coming off that, but we've had a few more days to digest it all now, and joining me to kind of talk about the state of the lightweight division and some other MMA news and a little UFC 323 will be the former UFC, the former Bellator champion, the Underground King. It will be Eddie Alvarez. Some great insights from him on the state of lightweight, fights to make, the fights that have been made, and a whole bunch of other stuff with Mr. Alvarez. I love his insights on the fight game. Few others know how to express the in and outs, both from the cage and outside of it, like Eddie Alvarez. So very much appreciative of his time. And on the back end of the show, no one better to help preview UFC 323, especially the bantamweight title fight, than one of the top contenders in the division, Mr. Ayman Zahabi, my fellow Canadian, will be making his debut on the program. He's working as an analyst for this event for Sportsnet up here in Canada. He'll be there in Vegas, as will I. But before we fly out, we are going to talk a little bit about the bantamweight division, where he fits after all these fights being made, like Davison Figueiredo versus Umar Nurmagomedov, Sean O'Malley versus Song Yadong. Those will come on the back end of a championship fight, of course, between Dvalishvili and Yan. So a lot to go over at 135 pounds with Mr. Zahabi. Thank you so much to the great people at MyBookie for sponsoring the show once again. Please make sure to like, subscribe, rate, comment, follow, all these different things. Share it with a friend. Let's try to keep getting exposure on the show. Appreciate everyone's amazing support and feedback to what we've done so far. So that does it for now for the intro. I'll be right back on the other side of the break with Mr. Eddie Alvarez. Back here on the Bonfire Podcast with one of the greatest lightweights in MMA history, one of our favorites, is Eddie Alvarez. Eddie, how are you doing, man?
What's up, brother? How you doing? Good day. Good to be on the show, baby.
Yeah, very good to have you back, man. How's your Thanksgiving? Good weekend and everything?
Excellent. Yeah. We have people over. So normally when we have people over at the house, like 30, 40 people.
Oh, wow.
Even on a regular weekend. So it was a busy one.
Yeah, for real. Well, no fights this past weekend, but some news happened before we kind of get into UFC 323 stuff. Want your opinion on a few items here. I got 3 points. So point one here, Tom Aspinall kind of finally broke his silence last night or Sunday night, put out some medical documents about what had happened when he got poked in the eyes by Ciryl Gane. Seems like surgery might be in play for him. And I don't know, this seemed like kind of an F you to everyone who said he was faking it or embellishing it or whatever. What do you just make of this now and kind of looking back on the fight and how he decided to not continue, knowing that it seems like it was pretty significant?
Yeah, it's like that's always a personal thing, you know. The crowd always wants more blood, more guts, more, you know, more punches. But the truth is only the corner and you know really what's going on. There's guys who like are really good at faking at quitting and things like that, but like only you guys know. And when you're the fighter inside there, there's no, I mean, I respect that he's like being transparent and putting it all out there to let people know, but he doesn't need to do that. You know what I mean? Nobody needs to question whether these fighters are tough or not. I mean, the fact that they make a walk to a cage and go fight another guy in front of millions is they're already tough. You don't need to explain that to people about, you know, why he did what he did. But, you know, only him and his corner can make that decision. And when there's that much implication, there's that much money, the world title, all that on the line, you don't want to play a bad hand. You know, it's like if this was a poker game, you know, and he got crushed in the eye there, he's playing like a 2-7 offsuit against, you know, against some aces. And you don't want to do that when there's that much implication on the line. So I think they made the right decision. They run it back. Tom knocks him out. It's dust in the wind. And everybody forgets that Tom, you know, had to forfeit the first match. So I think they made the right move.
Yeah, and Tom Aspinall's quote here, a portion of it, quote, "I didn't continue, and I'll tell you why I didn't continue, because I'm not a fucking dummy. I'm not going to go out there and fight one of the best strikers in the world if I can't see with an eye." So, yeah, fair play. And I think to what you said, I agree, you don't need to explain yourself. But when Dana White comes out at the press conferences and is like, "It's not that bad, like, he can be ready to go, we're trying to book this," like, you know, how many of the fans just kind of echo his opinions, or that's like the end-all be-all for them. So I feel like in this circumstance, Tom maybe did have to defend himself a little from that.
Yeah, especially the boss. He's the guy writing the check, so you got to say something. But like that, I always say, I teach fighters now, and it's like there's a difference between tough and stupid. It's a really thin line, right? Really, really thin line. I played that not line my entire career, so like very, very big difference. And what Tom did, I think, was smart, and he decided, look, I'll be tough later on.
Yeah, and the last thing he said kind of in that video that was noteworthy was he was saying that he felt Ciryl Gane like came in with the intention of cheating and was noting a lot of instances of back of the head shots, eye pokes, things like that, cage grabs in previous fights, and feels that he's just that kind of fighter. Could that affect your psychology going into a rematch? Like, what if Gane, even if it's totally accidental, pokes him in the eye again? Like, you're kind of already going in there with a certain mindset, or no?
I honestly, like, throughout my career, I never cared what I did inside there. Like, I wasn't apologetic about what I did inside there. Like, you put me in a cage, like, that's not who I am. So, like, if I did something dirty or something like that, that's not the person I am. I'm not a cheater. That's who I had to be in order to survive. So, like, I try to do my best to fight a clean fight. But at the end of the day, you guys locked me in a fucking cage, and I'm trying to stay alive. So, like, I'm going to do whatever it takes to stay alive. I'll let the refs do their job. I'm going to do my job. I'm going to try to do it with the most integrity, the highest of standard. But, like, we're in a cage. We're in a cage fight. Like, this isn't going to – it can get ugly in there.
Yeah, I guess you would be a good person to ask about this, because like your fight with Dustin Poirier, right? The first one ends off an accidental foul. You go into a rematch. Is that in your mind somewhere? Like, I need to be extra careful, or are you able to wipe the slate clean?
No, I wipe the slate clean. I actually don't even worry about fouls and stuff like that. That's the ref's job. That's not my job. You know what I mean? I'm going to throw shots. Sometimes your eyes are closed when you throw them. Sometimes they're open. My job is to stay alive and try to put the guy in front of me away. In between all of that, it's complete chaos. So, like, there's fouls that happen. It's not my job to call the foul on myself or call it on my opponent. There's a ref inside there, and that's his job. I like, nobody can be concerned with that going into a fight. There's too many other things you have to worry about.
Yeah, totally fair. Well, best wishes to Tom. I mean, hopefully he doesn't need surgery, because if he does, that's just going to make things even more messy in this heavyweight division, which is being a mess for, I think, the entire time I've covered the sport. I don't even can't remember a good time where it's like, yes, the heavyweight is being defended 3 times a year and it's consistent. It's always a crapshoot.
I mean, they're big boys, guys. When guys get hurt in that division, they get really damaged and really hurt. So yeah, it's hard to have a long lasting heavyweight just because of the, you know, the idea of injury.
Yeah. Okay. Point two here, Eddie, and you may not have even seen this because this is very fresh in the last like hour or so. Lance Pugmire of Boxing Scene reporting that there is discussions for Katie Taylor to box Ronda Rousey in 2026. Ronda Rousey coming back to combat sports. I don't know what it would be, an exhibition, rounds, all these things, but it says this is being discussed. Your initial reaction to that?
That's a terrible idea for Ronda. I mean, like, even when Ronda was in MMA, her hands were notoriously known for not being good. That might be like a money grab, or maybe they need a couple of dollars or something like that. Or Eddie Hearn probably is putting that together and getting a lot of money for.
Hiring isn't just about finding someone willing to take the job. You need the right person with the right background who can move your business forward. If you want candidates who truly match what you're looking for, trust Indeed Sponsored Jobs. With Indeed Sponsored Jobs, your post stands out to quality candidates who actually fit the role. According to Indeed data, 90% are more likely to be hired and trusted by 1.6 million companies. Spend more time interviewing candidates who check all your boxes. Less stress, less time, more results. Now with Indeed Sponsored Jobs. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to help your job get the premium status it deserves at Indeed.com/podcast13. Just go to Indeed.com/podcast13 right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/podcast13. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Do it the right way with Indeed.
Both of the girls. Mm-hmm. So, but I can't imagine that Ronda actually thinks she's going to beat Katie Taylor in a boxing match. I don't know. I mean, look, I've seen crazy things in this sport, but to go over to someone else's sport, like that's Katie Taylor's sport. She's the best in the world. And to think that you're going to do it'd be like Katie Taylor. Let's announce tomorrow Katie Taylor's going to go against Ronda in a judo match. You know, it's like silly.
Yeah. I know it's crazy. I don't know what the motives are. Like, there's been rumors of Ronda maybe coming back. I know there was talk potentially of her doing an MMA fight with Gina Carano, which would be like maybe more appropriate in 2026 than this. But yeah, I just don't even know how this happens, because Ronda did that book tour like year ago where she talked about how she had such bad concussions from judo that she had to hide it through her MMA career and her WWE career, and like talking about how, you know, any shot to the head would have her seeing stars. Like, once you put all this on the record, I don't know how any commission in good faith could license you.
Yeah, and Katie's not the woman you want to come back with. Like, yeah. She's actually been active.
Yeah.
I mean, her fights with Amanda Serrano were like incredible. Like, not the woman you want to come back to. Maybe you, like you said, maybe come back and do like a Gina Carano or like a couple lower level fights, build her confidence, get in the gym for a year or two, knock the dust off, and then take a big money fight or take a big risk. But she's going straight off the couch right to a big risk. Yeah. I don't like it for her. I don't like it for anybody involved. But
no, me neither. Well, we'll see if it gets to that stage, if it has to be an exhibition because of all these comments. But yeah, this seems like the worst case scenario. At least if it was MMA, you could convince me she could go in there and armbar someone in 20 seconds and not take a single punch like she did so many times. But boxing, the goal is to punch her in the head. So I don't really see how that would work out. So that's a little bit scary. But we'll see what happens there. Okay, point three. This is the stuff I wanted to talk to you most about today, Eddie. This lightweight division in the UFC right now. Ilia Topuria announces that he's taking a hiatus of sort. He's got some personal issues going on. I don't want to get too much into it. Sounds like maybe custody stuff, divorce stuff, very personal things. He's taking the time off. They make an interim title fight between Justin Gaethje and Paddy Pimblett for the first Paramount headliner January 24th. I guess just your first impressions of them doing it this way. Topuria doesn't vacate. They do an interim title. No Armin Sarukian in here either.
I mean, look, interims are the way to keep the division moving. I guess it's a way to keep the power within the UFC, right? Like, no one guy gets to keep the power of the title and gets to say, I need my time or anything like that. So, like, Ilya's got to have his time for whatever reason. And look, I love that I think Justin Gaethje deserves everything he gets. So like for Justin Gaethje to get any kind of title shot, I think of everyone in that division who put their time in, you're talking about Let's just run down a list of people who Justin Gaethje has fought. Yeah. And didn't blink an eye, said yes to everyone. It was myself, Michael Johnson, Dustin Poirier twice, Ferguson, Cerrone, Khabib, where Fazeev twice. Lost to Max in a friggin' barn burner, but literally the who's who. How are you going to ever tell that guy, regardless of record, regardless of whatever, that he don't deserve something? So it's like, Justin to me in that division right now, Islam moves up. Islam's not coming back. I don't think he's ever coming back. Justin would be the most deserving. Consider strength of schedule and considering how he fights, how he puts opponents away. Armin, of course, is right there. Armin's probably going to be pissed about this fight. Yeah. I'd imagine that he's freaking the freak out. But, I mean, UFC is first an entertainment company and then second a sport. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? It's like entertainment number one. What do the fans want? What are they yelling for? And then number two, all right, we'll be a sport somewhere in between there. But, like, we have to appease the fans and make them happy first. What I'm saying is it's entertainment first. UFC is an entertainment company first and a sport second. And what they're doing is giving the fans exactly what they want and ask for. And then they'll worry about rankings and who deserves what afterwards. Armin, he beat Benil. Yeah. Beat that Alvarez. I thought that Alvarez kid was a great Alvarez. Very dangerous. Oliveira, Hooker. He has a great list, but like, I don't think his strength of schedule is nearly what his strength of schedule. I'd say beat Paddy's, but when I look at these fights, I look at not did you win, I look at how'd you win. You know what I mean? So like, I think it's more important about how you win your fights rather than whether you win them or not. Like,
yeah. I mean, that's what kind of, I instantly react to this on Friday or Thursday, whenever it was Friday. And Dean Thomas was on, he was kind of saying like, cause they announced this and then they announced Volkanovski and Diego Lopez too, which I think kind of rubbed some people the wrong way. Like that maybe not being the right one. And his explanation is this is the Paramount era. They want to kick it off with the most exciting fights, as you were kind of saying there, the entertainment first over the matchmaking. But I think the reaction from a lot of fans is like, is this a further slippery slope? I mean, there's instances of this kind of stuff, this type of matchmaking for the entire history of the UFC. But if it's like, is this the plan for the Paramount era? Are we going to shove the meritocracy completely aside?
We slowly been doing that. I mean, like I started in 2003. So like I started an era when UFC was about to go bankrupt. So like I've watched the sport grow. I've watched it move and transform and evolve like along the way. So like, it's like I said, it's entertainment first. Pride was the same way, you know, pride was the same way, but like you have as a business, there's that fine line, right? Of, we need to make money and then we have to keep the legitimacy of our sport alive. Mm-hmm. So like, I think they do a good job for the most part. More and more, you're going to have to put these big fights on that fans want. And the customer's always right, brother. Regardless of what hardcores think and fighters think, the promoter and the customer's always right. You can't argue.
No, and that's the message to all the fans out there. I mean, if you're that upset with all this stuff, the only way you can show the UFC or any company that you're not satisfied is with your time and your dollars. And if you're still complaining about this and still watching it and still paying for it anyways, what motivation or incentive is them for them to change how they do business?
Yeah, exactly.
That's what it comes down to. But in a nutshell, I mean, this fight, like, it's awesome. Like, there's no way I don't think Gaethje versus Pimblett's going to be an absolute banger. When you start thinking about that, like, how do you see it kind of going down?
Yeah, like, I started going over this matchup. Even with my sons are training pretty heavily. And, like, when these matchups pop up, we're, like, in the living room for an hour, hour and a half. Like, playing devil's advocate, going back and forth with each other. But, look, I think the key to the fight for Gaethje is just to create a lot of volume against someone like Paddy, like a lot of volume. The leg kick's going to be everything to take away Paddy's lead leg to stop the onslaught. But like Paddy makes a lot of mistakes, right? So like he's susceptible to getting knocked out. But he's great, great, great in the scrambles, like amazing at scrambles and also amazing at creating them. If Justin had a weakness, like if I said, hey, Justin, we want to attack him here, make sure it would be his jiu-jitsu. He has great wrestling. He has great stand-up, and he's starting to get more defensive, like minded, where he's able to throw shots and not get hit. If he had a weakness, it'd be jiu-jitsu, you know, and that's where Patty's strong. So it's really, really hard fight to pick because Justin's a really hard guy to prepare for. You can't just spar with your friends and your teammates in the cage and think you're ready for a Justin Gaethje fight. You have to get out of your element and have guys get in your face and stand in the pocket and come after you so you can get ready for this kind of pace and this kind of pressure. If Patty does that, he'll be able to make adjustments and learn how to deal with someone like Justin in his training camp. But if he waits for the night of the fight, you know, it could be too late for a guy like Justin.
Well, what a freaking segue, Eddie. I don't know if you realize this. The show's going to come out December 2nd. That's the 8-year anniversary of your fight with Justin Gaethje.
No way.
2017. So it's like, could not be more perfect timing. I mean, you broke it down great there. Have you seen, obviously, you won that fight. I think Justin kind of started.
Hiring isn't just about finding someone willing to take the job. You need the right person with the right background who can move your business forward. If you want candidates who truly match what you're looking for, trust Indeed Sponsored Jobs. With Indeed Sponsored Jobs, your post stands out to quality candidates who actually fit the role. According to Indeed data, 90% are more likely to be hired and trusted by 1.6 million companies. Spend more time interviewing candidates who check all your boxes. Less stress, less time, more results. Now with Indeed Sponsored Jobs. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to help your job get the premium status it deserves at Indeed.com/podcast13. Just go to Indeed.com/podcast13 right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/podcast13. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Do it the right way with Indeed.
Making adjustments to his style after those ones, right? Have you seen like a dramatic difference between that guy and the one who's entering now? Obviously he's 37 years old entering this fight.
Yeah. Well, I was able to train with him quite a bit. Like I was going to Colorado. I fought Chad Mendez in Colorado for bare knuckle. So I went out there and they were nice enough to get Justin made me and my coaches dinner and we got to cut some weight together and hang out. Like, yeah, but I seen a dramatic change with him and Trevor Whitman. They added Kamaru Usman to their camp. They got Carrington Banks there, Corey Sanhagen. So like the minds and the knowledge inside of their, and they have a small little room. It's not a giant room where it's a small room with like-minded people. And they strategize really well and put together really good game plans with Trevor. So, like, you never want to bet against them guys. Their heart and soul is in the fight and in the strategy of beating the opponents. And I got to witness it firsthand. So, like, you know, I like them kind of camps, them small camps where everybody's friends. It's not just, like, gigantic rooms full of guys who are really good, who don't really talk to each other or aren't friends. But I think they got something special there. I think at the end of the day, you know, the UFC, of course, is going to want Patty to pull through. And it's hard to bet against the machine. But I think if anybody can do it, can beat the machine, it's Justin Gaethje. He's just very unpredictable. You know what I mean? Very unpredictable.
Yeah, it's interesting. My bookie, the opening odds for this fight, Patty Pimblett, -180, Justin Gaethje +200. Does that surprise you at all that Justin's that kind of dog?
That's going to change a lot. I think that line is going to change significantly before the fight.
Yeah. Interesting. Yeah, maybe that's why they put it out that way. But yeah, to see Justin in that against Patty, who everyone likes to point out. I mean, his last three opponents, Bobby Green, 38 years old on a 3-fight losing streak.
Ferguson,
39 on an 8-fight losing streak. And then Michael Chandler, 37-38 on a 3-fight losing streak. So
none. And look what Justin did to all them. I mean, he buzzsawed. Yeah. I think he buzzsawed every single one of them guys. Chopped them up pretty bad. So like, Yeah, the strength of schedule is just not there, like when it comes to Patty. So, like, there's still going to be a lot of questions that need to be answered that we haven't seen answered. But he's good. Patty's good. Like, I've seen streaks of really great things inside his fights, especially with scrambling and being able to create scrambles and being able to get himself in positions, like winning positions with the jiu-jitsu. He has really good jiu-jitsu. So, like, he plays into Justin's weaknesses really well if he just kind of creates some scrambles and that chaos. Mm. But, I mean, I think that line's off. I think it should be more of a pick 'em.
Yeah.
Considering that Justin's the stronger wrestler, you know, he has the wrestling background, you know? Mm-hmm. So, like, even if Patty has good jiu-jitsu, it's like, if you two wrestled, you probably wouldn't be able to get this guy down. So, like, what we end up in a stand-up fight.
Yeah.
Where I think Justin would have a serious advantage.
I would think so as well. What do you think back to that night 8 years ago? What's like the first thing that comes to mind when you think of that fight with Justin?
That I'm glad it's over and I never want to do it again.
Yeah.
I'm like, yeah. The fans don't ever ask for a rematch or anything like that, because that would have never. I'm like, I'm glad. He's unique, man, and he's one of my favorite guys to watch. So, like, but if you want to beat Justin Gaethje, you have to. So he's a forward fighter and a pressure fighter that he will stand in the pocket, and he's gonna throw everything he got in that pocket. If you don't meet him, you'll get chewed up. So Patty, the way to beat a guy who, like, does this very violent, aggressive pressure fighter, you have to meet him. You have to throw when he throws. So you got to be brave, and you got to go. You have to go when he goes in between his shots. Mm. If you do that, you got a fair shot. If you don't do that, if you're not brave and courageous and throw when he throws in between his shots, it's going to be a really long night. It's going to be a hard night for you.
Yeah, well, Patty Pimlet says Scousers can't be knocked out, so I think this will be the true test of that.
It's going to be the true testament, and that line's going to move. Based on my bet alone, that line might move.
Yeah, you're running, you just punched it in. I know, I was shocked when I saw that, and a few others were as well, so we'll see. But before we move on from this lightweight division, I guess, where does this leave the rest of the pieces? It seems like we're going to get Holloway versus Oliveira for the BMF. That seems like a layup of a rematch to make right now. They're both talking about it. I think the UFC Brazil account actually posted a fight announcement for it by accident and then deleted it. So I think we're going to get this in like March or April of next year.
Okay.
I guess just what do you make of that fight? Do you think that's the right one?
Yeah, you can't be mad at that. The division's kind of, it's basically Armin, Gaethje, Patty, and Ilya, right? I mean, they're the rightful owners of the division right now. Everybody else has been beaten or beat each other and like still has to poke their head up and make a name for themselves, per se. So, like, yeah, I think any one of them fights where two legends fight each other, you're not going to go wrong with Oliveira and Max. That's a barn burner. And considering where both of them are at in their career and who's their strength of schedule and who they fought, I mean, everybody's going to tune in for that.
Yeah, that's a great fight. It just leaves the big question of where does that put Armin Tsarukyan, right? Because like he did an interview. He said he wants to fight Holloway for the BMF. I'm 99.9% sure that's not happening with Oliveira there. But then, you know, where does that leave him? Because he's going to have to wait for this interim fight to play out, assuming Ilya gets his stuff in order and can fight the winner of that mid next year.
I think UFC just keeps using Armin to fill cards.
Yeah.
When that's your fault, right? Like, mm-hmm. It's your responsibility to go out there and do something that fans want to see, like that fans get excited about. I remember when I fought Pettis, I got in the back and I asked for a title shot, and he was an asshole guy, Joe Silva. Yeah, I was so mad at him. He embarrassed me in front of all his buddies. He goes, yeah, you fight like that, you're never going to get a title shot. You fight like that. And like, I was so pissed off because he embarrassed me in front of a lot of people, but also he was right. You know, looking back in retrospect, he was kind of right. It's like, I won the fight, right? But like, nobody cares you win a fight. Like your family cares. That's it. The fans want to see something special, something unbelievable. They want to see excitement, blood, guts, and you have to give the customer what they want. So like, if you're not getting the fight you want, you're not getting moved up to the division the way you want, you know, maybe you have to adjust your style to be more, even you can be a ground guy and be exciting. You know, Khabib was very exciting when he took people down and ground and pounded. And he was always working to get a finish, toward a finish. You can do that. Nobody cares about you holding people and winning. Nobody wants to see that, including myself.
Yeah, it's a tricky one for sure. I mean, I thought he did well against Dan Hooker. Like, I thought as well as you can in that position. It didn't seem like boring or slow, but yeah, maybe he needs a few more of those to show it's consistently done or whatever they're looking for. I don't know.
Yeah, what's Armin so far, he's got, you know, Benny, Charles, Hooker, and maybe the Alvarez kid is on his list, but these aren't names like the way, you know, Oliveira got, Gaethje got, and these other guys at the top of the division have on their resume, and the way Gaethje's finishing them versus the way you're just winning. How you gonna who you arguing with, you know?
Yeah, no, it's a really tricky spot for him. I feel bad, but you know, he had his chance at the title and he pulled out on Wednesday, so you're gonna have to deal with the consequences of that for however long. We'll see. We know UFC doesn't mind holding a grudge, but I guess if you look at Justin and Patty, like, this is probably out of all those names you mentioned there, right, in the division, I feel like this is the most winnable fight for each of them, right? Like, I think this is Patty's best chance to get a piece of that gold. It's Justin's, compared to if they were to be fighting either Ilya or Armin in the same mix-up.
Yeah, when you think about momentum, like, in careers and how young they are, like, the age and all that, you would think, all right, this is Patty's shining moment that he's going to – that he's – he.
When your company earns unlimited 2% cash back on all purchases with Capital One, that's serious business. So, Steven at SandCloud got a serious business card, the Spark Cash Plus card from Capital One.
We used our 2% cash back to help build our retail presence.
Savvy, Steven.
And we get big purchasing power, so our business can spend more and earn more.
The Spark Cash Plus card from Capital One. What's in your wallet?
Terms and conditions apply. Find out more at CapitalOne.com/SparkCashPlus.
Has the right opponent in front of him to thrive, because considering Justin does have the strength of schedule, but that also means all of them wars, you know, that he's been in as well. Patty doesn't have that strength of schedule that's been in them wars like that yet. So he could be the fresher guy coming in, but we have yet to see. Justin never disappoints, so we're going to have a lot of fun with this one. Who do you got?
I will probably pick Justin. That's how I feel the smart thing, the leg kicks. And yeah, I just think his power might be there and Patty might be too confident. But I don't know. I'm interested to see them face off. I think we might actually get a press conference on Friday before the weigh-ins to see kind of how much bigger Patty potentially is. But
he's like Justin over time has grew in to be a big 55 pounder. But
yeah,
Patty, because of how young he is, he reminds me of the kid Morales. Like, these young kids, these younger guys. How old's Patty?
I think he's 29.
Oh, yeah. So in his 20s. Like, the younger guys in their 20s or that, their muscles, like, they replenish like crazy after weigh-ins. Like, they're 40 pounds heavier, 35 pounds heavier. It's kind of wild to see. So, like, Patty's a big, big 55er.
Yeah. And I know the plan originally was Ilya versus Patty before this came out in January. So Justin, kind of, I think this is the big opportunity for him, because he was saying, I'm not going to fight, like, I'm going to retire, right, unless it's the title shot. And I don't think that plan was working out for him until Ilya's stuff came about, and then it changed in the last few days. So it definitely feels like a huge opportunity for him in that sense, because it wasn't coming.
Yeah, I love this path for – I like the path for Justin. You know what I mean? I like – Patty's great, but you can't do shit without your calf.
Yeah, we'll see what happens. Okay, actual last thing on lightweight. Do you want to see Sean Brady join this division, or is this crazy talk?
That would be interesting, because right now, like I said, we only have four candidates. There's only, what, possible four guys right now. If he pops down, I think he's in the mix right away, like immediately. Yeah. Immediately, you could put him in there with any one of them guys. The only drawback to bumping down a division, you know, going down a division when you fight up for so long, and I dealt with this, but when I moved early in my career, like after my first 10 fights, I was welterweight, and I realized I was just too small for the division. I went to 55, but I was young when I did it. I was only like 24, 25. What happens is the speed changes so drastically. There's such a speed change and a pace change from 55 to 70 that maybe it's good to kind of dip your toe in and slowly make that move if you can, because to deal with the volume and the speed of welterweight versus the volume and the speed of lightweight, it's night and day. And then when you jump down to 45 and 35, it's like, holy shit, how many punches these guys are throwing a minute versus how many punches they're throwing a minute at welterweight. The pace, the speed, all of it changes. So like a slow moving into that, I guess I would suggest for anyone.
Yeah. I guess that was just the question of like, all those fights seem great on paper, but what condition or version of Sean Brady is showing up? What is he losing? What is he gaining by moving down to lightweight? Because I see all the people reacting to his comments and be like, here's the photo of Sean Brady at lightweight, and it's just like him with a leg erased or something. Right? It's like, that's what it would take.
Yeah, I mean, he's mostly muscle. Like, he's mostly all muscle. So, like, that could be a good thing and a bad thing, you know what I mean? Because at 55, he'd be complete muscle. Like, there wouldn't be an ounce of fat on him. He'd probably rehydrate really good because the muscle would suck up all that water. But like as far as strength, no one would be even close. He would do whatever he wanted to any one of them guys.
Yeah, that's fascinating. Well, I wonder how he ultimately makes that decision, right? Like, how does that process work? Is it just the team says, okay, we're going to do it. You tell UFC you're moving down and they offer you whatever fight in that division?
I would guess it starts with like, get your body scanned first and see how much muscle you're actually holding, because it take a little while to correctly strip muscle. Fat you can get rid of, like if you have a certain amount, but Sean, even at welterweight, Sean's like mostly muscle. So like he's gonna have to cut a leg off for sure.
Yeah. So we'll see. That's an interesting storyline. Okay, Eddie, I will spend a few minutes here on UFC 323 this Saturday in Las Vegas. I know you appreciate greatness and history in the sport. Mirab Dvalishvili trying to defend that bantamweight title for the fourth time this calendar year. There's been 8 champions who have done it 3 times in a calendar year. No one's ever done it 4. He's attempting this here against Piotr Jan. I guess just starting there, trying to do 4 championship camps in a 12-month stretch, like how difficult is that element to overcome even before getting into the cage?
His story to me is one of the greatest, only because in this sport, I've seen a lot of people get jealous within camps when two guys are at the height of their careers, like kind of in their primes together, the way Aljo and Mirab were.
Yeah.
And there was not 1 ounce of jealousy. There was only, hey, right now is your turn, and I'm going to help you take advantage of your turn as much as I could. I've always been that guy, like for everybody in the room. I've always been like that. And that's a really difficult thing that inside of camps that I see happen. A lot of jealousy, a lot of envy, a lot of I deserve this, or I should be getting this and he's getting it. So there's nothing more I love to see than a guy who's patient and knows if my friend is having his turn right now, it's my job to help him make the most of his turn. And then I hope the world's reciprocal and that I'll get my turn as well. And then he'll do the same for me. That story is the greatness of this whole story, not Mirab defending a bunch of times. It's my friend was a world champion and so am I. And we did it all in the same camp together, like kind of wild. Yeah. Very rare. Usually you'll get a split up. Someone will leave a camp or something like that. So I think Merab gets it done. I think Jan is not Jan's going to be in front of him. He's not going anywhere. Jan's a pressure fighter. He's right in front of you. If you allow Merab, if you're right in front of Merab, you allow him to grab you. His style is like, he's not so much worried about damaging you, but he will get to your waist, push you against the cage, go for foot trips, go for your leg, and he can do it for 25 minutes. Like if he got tired, I'd say, all right, Jan will wear him out eventually and be able to defend his shots to a degree. He'll break Merab's spirit, and then once he does that, he can start coming on with the striking and all that. But no, I just think we're going to see Peter Jan defending wrestling for 25 minutes. Like Merab has forced everyone else to do.
Yeah, and how do you make it a different fight, though? Because obviously that's the way the odds are going. My bookie right now has Dvalishvili minus 440 and Jan at plus 310. So there's obviously a lot of confidence it's going to be the same fight. But if you're Jan, how do you make it a different fight and try to maybe cut down some of those takedown attempts?
Number one, he's going to have to – well, the calf kick, it would be great to smash the calf to stop so much of the momentum, but body shots super early on anybody who has a pace like Merab or like a relentless pace where they're just go. You have to go to the body really early in the fight, and you won't feel the effect of it until you feel the offensive attacks wane. When the third and fourth and fifth round come around, you realize, wow, he's not attacking nearly as much as he usually does. That's the body shots, the investment in the body shots coming to fruition. So like any fighter I know who I'm going to have trouble breaking this guy, punch him in the head, do whatever it takes. That guy, very early on in the fight, I got to begin investing, got to what we would call flatten his tires. You got to invest in the body super early. Jan being able to chuck up like very light knees in the middle of them exchanges, maybe knees to the solar plex, to the liver, and then always, always just relentlessly investing in body shots in the first and second round. I think if he does that and he can score enough of them, we can slow the pace of Merab down enough to where we could turn it into a fight and just not turn it into I'm defending Merab's wrestling for 25 minutes, you know? So I think... Yeah.
When your company earns unlimited 2% cash back on all purchases with Capital One, that's serious business. So Steven at SandCloud got a serious business card, the Spark Cash Plus card from Capital One.
We used our 2% cash back to help build our retail presence.
Savvy, Steven.
And we get big purchasing power, so our business can spend more and earn more.
The Spark Cash Plus card from Capital One. What's in your wallet?
Terms and conditions apply. Find out more at CapitalOne.com/SparkCashPlus.
That's going to be a key to win, major key to win. Otherwise, I just don't, you know, you're just forced to defend single leg, sweeps, sambo, like everything that Merab comes at you with.
Yeah, he's got a lot of tools there, and it'll be interesting. It's the big octagon this time. Their first fight was the small cage inside the Palms, I think. I don't know how much that could impact, but worth noting, I guess, in that sense that is a part here. Do we need to worry at all about, you know, this catching up with Merab? I mean, it seems like, to your point there at the beginning, it's a very good and positive environment in these training camps and his team and everything, but doing this four straight times in a year, is there any chance, you know, he shows up on fight night and it's like, oh, this just caught up to me?
I think it's our performances and like the results of them are more of a byproduct of our beliefs, not any scientific thing or anything like that. And I don't think Merab believes in overtraining. I don't think he believes in overfighting. I don't think he believes in any of it. I think he's the type of guy who says, if I train more, I'll have more success. If I go harder, I'll break my opponents even faster. And I think all his success he's had are a byproduct of what he believes. And he talks the talk, and then he goes out there and shows everyone. So like, you know, he's proven to be the machine he is.
Do you already have him as the bantamweight goat, or does this fight decide it for you? He's tied with Aljo for consecutive title defenses at 3, already has the longest winning streak, most wins in this division, all that stuff. I had Dominic Cruz on last week. He said that's up for the fans to decide, but like, you know, he's done some great work here. I think he was kind of conceding it to it, but where do you have him?
Yeah, I mean, kind of really hard to argue right now. Really difficult, especially considering, like I said, I'm a fan of him and the person he is. Like, to do what he did, to wait behind your buddy, why he has the belt, why he has everything that you aspire to have, wait behind him patiently and support him and lift him up. And then when your turn comes, take full advantage of it and then do your best to make the most of your opportunity. The whole story is great to me. It's amazing story. And like, for that reason, and a lot of recency bias, because, you know, when you look at guys like Dominic and that whole crew, there's no denying their greatness as well, you know, but the recency bias and the story, I'd say, yeah, it's hard to deny, call Merab the GOAT.
For sure. Okay, last thing here, Eddie, and I'll get you out of here. 4 lightweight fights on this card at UFC 323. Do any of these matchups or fighters in particular give you interest? Grant Dawson versus Manuel Torres, Terrence McKinney versus Chris Duncan, Nazim Sadyakov versus Faraz Ziam, and Edson Barboza versus Jalen Turner.
Turner's back?
Yeah.
He didn't retire?
He did. He's back. Short-lived.
I talked to him when he retired. I didn't think he should have retired. I thought that was not a. I didn't like the decision of him retiring. But I don't like people who. I think when people retire, they should be done, because it means like there was a thought in your mind that you're finished. I don't think you should come back after that. But we'll see how that goes. Edson's I've trained with Edson for years. He's super dangerous. This is at what, 45 or 55? 55?
He's back at 55. He had one fight there last time, and I think he's back there for good now.
I like Edson a lot better at 55 than I did at 45.
Yes.
Crazy athlete. He's a friend of mine. We've trained together at Nick Catone's down in Jersey for years before he moved to American Top Team. But that's going to be a barn burner of like a stand-up battle, right? Like, yeah. That should be a really good fight. What's the other? The two of them I don't really know the guys, but the other one I was
Grant about. Dawson versus Manuel Torres, Terrence McKinney versus Chris Duncan, and Nazim Sadyakov versus Faraz Ziam.
Terrence McKinney, I'm like a fan. I'm a fan of this guy. Like him. Really like what he's doing, and I'm looking forward to seeing like a lot of success in him. He's one to watch out for, I think, and I think. Eventually I could see him becoming a world champion. So like, I'm looking forward to his fight, and always been a fan of Edson. I'm looking forward to Edson winning.
Awesome. Yeah, this should be a good card. The final traditional pay-per-view of this ESPN era. This is all left behind here. So it's going to be interesting to see how.
Don't miss out. Make sure you buy it.
Yeah, there we go. We'll see. It's going to be new times. I'm curious to see how these championship contracts with no pay-per-view points are going to work in the next era, and just all the stuff that's going to go on behind the scenes. But hopefully we'll get more information. I'm going to be asking Dana White what he's raising these bonuses to in 2026, because he promised that when this first deal was done. He said they're definitely going up. So
what do you think they're going to?
I mean, anything less than 100K would be disappointing, right? They got double their TV money in the $7.7 billion deal. So at minimum, doubling the bonuses would seem logical, but
yeah, but that was just double on the American deal, right?
Exactly. There's all those other things. They're still charging pay-per-views to us in Canada all through 2026. So I don't know how that's going to work. That's also a weird thing. I don't know how you justify that. I mean, just buy a VPN. Sign up for Paramount Plus. It's going to be much cheaper on your pocket. So
look, I don't, every fighter, like, it's an opportunity to be in UFC and make them big fights and get them big pay-per-views, what it is. But like, if any fighters out there listening, you'll never get what you deserve. You'll always, a promoter's job is to get you to fight as cheap as possible. You only get what you negotiate. So like, you know your value, go out there, try to knock people out, and then, you know that you did a great job and get paid for it. But you only get what you negotiate. Not a penny more.
Exactly. And that's that goes for many walks of life, Eddie. So that's great advice overall there. All right, man, I appreciate you so much. This was awesome. We'll get you back on here soon. Yeah, thank you so much, Eddie. I'm going to take a quick break and I'll be right back with Eamon Zahabi to talk more about this bantamweight division and where he fits.
Awesome. I'll see you, brother.
This episode of the Bonfire Podcast is brought to you by MyBookie. For all of your UFC 323 betting needs, use MyBookie, whether it's over-unders, parlays, prop bets, straight picks, and everything in between. MyBookie has it all to enhance your UFC 323 betting experience. Use the code word BON, B-O-H-N, for a first-time sign-up player bonus. Can do that if you're a supporter and follower of the pod. Use that code and be sure to bet responsibly with MyBookie. Back here again on the Bonfire now with a first-time guest of the show, my fellow Canadian Eamon Zahabi, who could not ask for a better time. Eamon, with UFC 323 this weekend, obviously you are a highly ranked bantamweight, but you're working this one as an analyst too for Sportsnet.
Yeah, I love doing that with Sportsnet. You know, I've gotten to do it a couple times in the past. You know, I think it's good to stay in front of the audience, you know, and just keep my name out there. And now with my 7-fight win streak, I feel like people know me a lot more. So I'm excited to see the reaction after we do it this weekend.
Yeah, and so much made in the States, right? The final pay-per-view, the final numbered event. I don't think quite the case for us in Canada. As far as I know, like at least through this first beginning of 2026, it's still full pay-per-view price. You order it through linear pay-per-view or Sportsnet pay-per-view. What do you just make of that? I mean, I think I haven't heard anyone in the UFC explain this to Canadian fans yet.
Well, I mean, they have the rights. Sportsnet has the rights to UFC in Canada for the next, I think, 3 more years.
Wow.
So until that deal is up, we're not getting the whole new Paramount deal. So wherever the contracts are up in other countries, that's where they're probably going to try to get Paramount there. Mm-hmm. But for now, you know, we're locked into Sportsnet for a few more years, so we got to tough it out. But, you know, Sportsnet's doing a great job. You know, they hire people like me, so I absolutely love them. I'm a big company.
Of course.
But,
yeah, no.
It's you know, it is what it is, but I don't think it hinders the experience in any way.
Yeah, no, and Sportsnet does incredible coverage. Aaron Bronstetter, yourself, Diana Balbeta, all the great people. It's been awesome and I think a great step forward for the sport in our country. But yeah, just definitely interesting because, yeah, it's not the last pay-per-view for us Canadians, but we'll see what the future holds. But yeah, an interesting time for bantamweight, man. I mean, I guess let's start with you because obviously all these fights get made. Davidson Figueiredo versus Umar Nurmagomedov, Sean O'Malley versus Song Yadong. These are some of the names you were calling out after your win in Vancouver. I believe you're not in any of these fights though because of your health, is that correct?
Yeah, because I broke my arm in the second round of the Marlon Vera fight, so I can't really fight anyway. I'm still in the healing process. I'm not even back to full training yet, but I kind of feel like it works out in my benefit. All I need is Marab to win on Saturday. Like, I've never really rooted for another bantamweight who's not on my team to win, but like, I feel like if he wins, I'm maybe next because everyone else is fighting in January. Marab wants to fight every 3-4 months. Who's going to be ready for him in March? You know, I feel like that like kind of leaves it wide open. Plus everybody else ahead of me, he's beat except for Figueiredo, I think, and Song. To me, Song and Figueiredo are the only ones who haven't fought him yet. Mm-hmm. So like there's a, you know, and plus my 7-fight win streak, there's some value there. You know, even Tim Welch said it'd be a good fight for Sean O'Malley, Umar Nurmagomedov calling me out too. Mm-hmm. So I feel like, I felt like the hot girl in high school. Everyone wants to take the prop. I felt like, you know, everybody wants, you know, my 7-fight win streak. So, you know, why not me next? You know, it could be cool.
Yeah, I mean, we'll see how all of these fights break. So, yeah, I mean, that's how bad was like the injury? You had to get surgery or no?
Yeah, so it was a full break. So I got a plate and some screws in there. But the doctor assured me that like it will never break again in the same place. It's actually going to be more durable in that area. So like that's why I was like, I was nervous about people finding out. So I kept it close to the chest, you know, Saturday, Sunday and Monday. But after my surgery, my doctor's like, look, even if people know, they can't break it there again. So might as well tell the people if you want, you know. So, and like, I'm kind of proud that nobody could tell that my arm broke in the second. Because like, you know, most times when things happen, like your hand breaks, you stop using it. I kept using it the same way. Like nothing changed, nothing deterred. I didn't even tell Firas. I was kind of scared like the commission would want to stop the fight if they heard, you know. Like I didn't know what to say. So I just kept it to myself and I did it. Like even Firas was shocked. Because, you know, he's been watching me spar and fight for 20 years. Yeah. And, like, even he couldn't tell it was broken, you know? So I'm really proud of that. You know, I wear, like a badge of honor in a way. So, like, I'm really happy. And then I just, and it goes to show that you really got to put me out cold to get me out of there. You know, I'm like unbreakable mentally now. And I feel that plays in really well for the future.
Was it painful in the fight? Like, if that's a 5-round fight, are we having a different conversation now? Or,
you know, it was strange. I had never broken a bone in my life. So yeah. When the kick landed, I felt this weird feeling I had never felt before. So the first thing was like, oh, it must be broken. But then, you know, he's still attacking me. So the adrenaline just kicked in even more. And then I didn't feel the pain until I got backstage with the doctors. Mm. So like the adrenaline kept me going. Actually, I started feeling it a little bit when I was getting my arm raised. you see, like, I stopped lifting my left arm at one point as we were walking. I was like, oh, wait a second. Something's wrong with my arm. And I felt that it was like, oh, man, I hope it's not broken. And when the doctors checked it backstage, they're like, yeah, they're like, what do you want to do? I'm like, listen, I'm going out for steaks tonight. So they're like, okay, just take care of it in Montreal. Yeah, perfect. So I didn't do anything for it until Monday, which was hilarious. So I walked around the city with my arm, like, just clicking all night. It was so awkward. But, you know, the pain was worth it. It was nice to celebrate that win.
Yeah, huge win. So they're saying what, as far as, like, a timeline? Like, when do you think you'll be cleared, you could do a camp, and you're able to fight what month?
Yeah, so I'm supposed to find out Wednesday. So Wednesday, it's okay. My checkup to know when I can go back to full training. So I'm hoping that I can get back to full training by the end of this month, you know. So I'm hoping for like end of March, April would be a nice return, you know, like timeline wise for me, because of the injury, you know. Or else, like, I like the whole fighting three times. A lot of people don't know, but when I fought October 18th, I fought three times within 365 days.
Yeah.
First time ever in my career. You know, I loved it. I thought it was great. I feel like it kept the momentum in my training and my career. And I feel like it gave me a better following. Like, more Canadians knew about me. More people know about my name now because I fought three times in a year. So they saw me more often. And I feel like it helps. I feel like there is a benefit to fighting multiple times in a year. So I would like to keep that going. You know, obviously, like, when I had the surgery, the doctor told me, he's like, look, he's like, if we can let the bone heal, you'll get back faster than if you try to get into training early and you re-break it or something happens, you're only going to make things worse. You know, so he's like, let's be conservative and try to get you back as soon as possible. Don't delay it in that sense. Like, don't be a hero. He's kind of basically telling me, don't be an egomaniac, you know? Yeah. And so, like, I'm trying to listen. So hopefully we get some good news on Wednesday, December 3rd. Right. I'm supposed to find out. Yeah.
Yeah. We'll have our fingers crossed for you. You can give us the update when we run into each other in Vegas later in the week, but
yeah,
let's get into a couple of these fights now that they did announce. Sean O'Malley versus Song Yadong for UFC 324. Obviously, Sean, you know, 2-fight losing skid against Merab. Song has been in this division for quite a long time now, kind of hanging around in the top 15. This feels like a very important fight if he wants to get where he needs to be. But what are you kind of just making of this matchup and your early thoughts on who wins?
Yeah, I think it's gonna be a striking matchup. You know, I think it would be smart for Song to try to get the fight to the ground eventually. You know, I think Sean O'Malley's got a great reach advantage in this fight. He uses his distance well, uses his timing super well. Song, I think he's naturally very fast, but one thing I noticed in the Peter Yan fight is he ended up slowing down in terms of raw speed over time. And it's something you can't slow down with O'Malley. You know, with O'Malley, you got to continue to pick up the pace on him because he also slows down. So it's almost like, let's see who's going to slow down first, you know, and who's coming in with the better strategy. You know, who's coming in with the better tactics. Like, if Song reaches for a punch like Aljamain Sterling, you know, Sean could maybe put him out. You know, this is a much closer fight than people think. I think it's a 50-50 fight. You know, I wouldn't give either guy a huge advantage. But I'm excited to see how, you know, Song bring, well, like, what game plan he brings to the table in this fight. I'm interested to see.
Yeah, and it's always interesting to see, like, the guy, like Sean even said, I think, on his podcast today or yesterday, like, this is a very different spot. I'm not in a 5-rounder. I'm not the main event. I'm not the co-main event. Like, I think he was joking around being like, my career is down bad right now. But, like, he's still in a good spot. But, like, yeah, I'm assuming he's in a different mindset right now, right? Like, it feels like he needs to prove that he's still going to be in the contender pack with these guys, especially
he's got no choice. Like, for me, like, when I was preparing for Marlon, to me, in my mind, Marlon's not a loser. The guy's a winner. You know, he lost 2 in a row. He doesn't want to lose 3. You know, he's got the resources. He's got the team. He's got connections. He's been around the game a long time. You know, he can bring in people for camp. He watches a lot of tape. You know, he's a student of the game. So I expected the best version of Marlon coming to the fight. And, you know, I don't think Song should underestimate O'Malley just because he's lost two fights. You know, yeah. I guess he's joking around O'Malley saying this stuff, but there's no way he wants to lose.
No.
There's no way he's coming there to lose. He's coming there to win, baby. And, you know, I'm sure he's put in the time and the effort and the training to try to go out there and best Song, because he doesn't want to have that stink of the three-fight losing streak. Like, mm-hmm. that is hard to shake. You know, yeah. it ain't easy. And, like, you see how mad Marlon was. I don't think Marlon was mad at me, you know. I think he was mad because, you know, he put in a lot of effort and he came up short. It is what it is. That's life, you know. And it's not going to be good for sponsors. It's not going to be good for, like, the next matchup or whatever. Who knows what the UFC is going to do. You know, like, they don't love a guy who loses three in a row. But he always puts on great fights. And with Sean O'Malley, he's built a lot of credit with the UFC, so we'll see. But he's definitely coming to win. So if I was Song, I would be preparing for the most dangerous O'Malley possible. Because he's coming to win.
Yeah, you got it for sure. That'll be very interesting. And right before that fight at UFC 324 will be Umar Nurmagomedov versus Davison Figueiredo. That was added kind of the last of Dana White's announcements. Great fight. Umar said, you know, he wanted one more before Ramadan when he got his win over Bautista. They're giving it to him. If he wins this one, I know a lot of people saying they're going to try to rush him into a title shot again too soon. I mean, he's trying to earn it here. And Figueiredo, he's had his kind of ups and downs since moving up to bantamweight, but this is an important one for him as well. This is a great fight.
This is a huge fight. And, you know, his last fight against Montel is a beast, okay? Yeah. It ended up being a chess match, and he won by a little bit. But he's such a dangerous guy, Montel. He's got such a huge reach advantage against Figueiredo. He's got one of the most knockdowns in bantamweight history, Montel, as well. You know, so I feel like he played a really good game. And, you know, people, you know, they talk about Figueiredo's age, but his mind is still working. Like, I feel like he fought the fight he had to fight to get to stay ahead against a hungry young guy, you know, who's got a lot of physicality, who's got reach, he's got, you know, power, he's got good wrestling, and he's still able to take him down. You know, he fought in a smart way to get the win. And I wouldn't put it past him to try to find another way to beat Umar. You know, I think Umar is going to be too much for him in the end, because a lot of, you know, Figueiredo's strengths, Umar has similar strengths, you know, and he's just more useful, he's got a great team. Great tactical ability as well, great discipline. So I think that's a great fight. I give a slight edge to Umar. You know, I would think it's 60-40 for Umar in that sense. And, you know, I'm hoping that, you know, like, it's got to be an entertaining fight. And I'm not trying to put the pressure on these guys. And it's like one thing I noticed for myself is that you not only have to win, but something has to happen in there. There has to be some kind of drama, or you dominate the guy totally. Like, I just did an interview with James Lynch recently, and, you know, maybe one of the reasons why people count out Peter Yan, it's because he's just been winning by decision. And it's like, but people don't understand, like, when you win in fights in the top five, it ain't easy to finish these guys.
No kidding.
It ain't easy. These guys are all good.
They're all so good.
Yeah, they're all winners. They all have winning mentality. They don't want to quit. Some of them never break. They've never been broken. No. You know, so it's hard to be the first guy to do it. And, like, I just want to see the action-packed fights. You know, I want to see Umar, like, really do something great, or Figueiredo do something really good. And then, like, you know, it just builds up the bantamweight division. You know, I just want to see fireworks.
Yeah, well, it's clearly the UFC is valuing that more than ever. I mean, I know there's been a lot of talk these past few days about Paddy Pimblett getting in the interim title fight, Diego Lopez getting his rematch with Volkanovski. You could make an argument they're not the most deserving, but, you know, those are going to be very entertaining fights, especially to kick off the Paramount era. I don't love it for, you know, the meritocracy angle. I want to see the best fight the best and the most deserving. That's what this whole sport was built on, but I think we're starting to see more of that, and it seems like fighters like yourself, too, are noticing it.
Yeah, we're noticing it. And, like, listen, I love finance. I don't think if I wasn't in the UFC, I'd be in business. I'd be some kind of entrepreneur. But, you know, they went from a $1.1 billion deal with ESPN to a $7.7 billion deal with Paramount. Yeah. We need to make up the difference with entertainment. Like, they're betting big on UFC to bring in the dollars. So the UFC's putting up fights that are going to increase the fan base, increase viewership. So I think, like, we have to take that into consideration to a certain extent. And I feel like sometimes a lot of the matchmaking is like, which two guys can we put together that's going to give us a great fight? Not necessarily, you know, who deserves it the most. There is some of that. There is, like, you know, they are top guys are still fighting top guys. You know, like, I don't want to sound like a favoring somebody or not. Like, I don't even know Lerone Murphy.
Sure.
But I think he's super entertaining. So I was kind of surprised that Diego got it, because how can you say Lerona's not entertaining? You know, I mean, I think she's still crazy, phenomenal to watch. So I was kind of surprised a little bit, but Diego has a huge fan base. You know, that fight with John Silva was incredible. You know, but that spinning elbow knockout from Lerona, it's like, he can do it, man. He can do something. He can do something cool in there. You know, he's got what it takes. The Movsar is the one I feel like who's really eating it in terms of like,
you know, getting past. I mean, that. I understand him at least because like he's been very inactive. He pulled out of that fight against Pico that Lerone stepped into and won. If he had fought that and won, maybe we're having a different conversation. Like him, he's kind of hurt himself with the inactivity. But yeah, Lerone is, I mean, that one's hard to justify for me.
Yeah, that was a tough one for me, you know? Yeah. And like, I'm nothing against Diego. Like, I think Diego could win. There's a possibility. But I think he has to go. He can't fight the same fight that he did last time. In my opinion, I think Volkanovski's work is too far ahead of Diego Lopez for him to do the same plan to try to beat him in striking. He's got to find a way to get Volkan on the ground and I'll grapple him. He's got great submissions. He's got great submissions. Why not go that route? I don't think he wins it in the striking, to be honest. If he goes, if it's five rounds of striking, I give it to Volk.
Yeah. Well, we basically just saw that. So we'll see, we'll see what happens, adjustments Diego can make. It's crazy, man. So we'll see what happens there. But okay, let's get into UFC 323 now. Before the main event, there is one other key bantamweight fight on this card. Henry Cejudo facing Peyton Talbot. Maybe the retirement fight for Henry. We don't know. I feel like every interview he says something different. So we'll see what decision he ultimately makes depending on this fight. But clearly the UFC is trying to do something here, right? Like Peyton Talbot, the younger guy, if you can get him a win over the future Hall of Famer, former two division champion, that'd be great. But can he do it? I mean, we just saw in January, Peyton take his first loss to Jaoni Barcelos. He had some serious troubles on the ground in that fight. Henry Cejudo is an Olympic gold medalist wrestler, even though he doesn't always use it. But if he does use it, this seems like a very straightforward fight, but will he aim in?
Yeah, that's like, listen, for me, the question is, he's so famous now, Henry Cejudo. He's got such an incredible podcast with Usman. They're doing phenomenal, great interviews. They're putting out a great product. He travels a lot, got a gym. He's got so many things going on. He's got a lot of pans on the stove, man. You know, if he's not training to the level he was training when he was competing before the podcast, before the fame, before all of the success, you know, Talbot might get this one over him. And I agree, Henry's got the better wrestling. But is he maintaining it? Is his sword still sharp? Or has it dulled too much? You know? Like, Barney Barcelos came to win that fight. You know, yeah, he's old. He's older. He's like, you know, my age, maybe a year older than me or whatever. But he didn't want to go down like that. He didn't want to lose to this kid. He came hungry. Like, how hungry is Henry? I feel like it's going to come down to how much effort he put in training. Like, technically, on paper, Henry should win. But does he have the heart? Does he have the mindset to, you know, go out on his shield? Is he going to fight reserved? There's so many questions about Henry. Whereas Talbot, it's like, okay, this up-and-coming kid, okay, he lost one time, doesn't want to lose again, beat another prospect after his loss, right? Kind of redeemed himself. And then now he's got this, like, wonderful opportunity to step on a guy who's, you know, won the belt, won the gold medal in the Olympics. He can really build his name off a really credible win. So he should be giving his full effort. He doesn't have a podcast going on. He doesn't have anything else. Like, he's got the fight. He's got this fight against the biggest name he's ever had. Like, you might see a hungrier Talbot than you see Henry Cejudo. And, like, I don't think Henry needs the money. Like, I don't think he needs the money. I don't care what anybody says. Yeah, people are saying, oh, he's fighting because he needs the money. I doubt it, man. Listen, I doubt it. The success he's had in his life, I feel like he's got to be well invested. His podcast is popular. I think he's doing it to leave on a win. And I hope that's enough motivation to out-motivate what Talbot's got going on. But for me, I think I give Talbot the slight edge because I think fighting comes down to heart and mindset, not only skills. It's whoever fights the best that night. And I think Henry Cejudo is the better fighter, whether he wins or loses on Saturday. I think, you know, on paper, he's the better fighter.
It'll be fascinating to see if he does lose this fight, what kind of like legacy discussions will be around Henry Cejudo, because he had that incredible run, two belts, two weight classes, then he retires. Yeah. In the cage after beating Dominic Cruz, takes 2 years off, and then it's being the loss to Aljo in a title fight, the loss to Merab in a contender fight, the loss to Song Yadong, and then potentially a fourth here. I mean, it already feels like he made a bad call retiring on the timing he did, but
it's tough because, like, I don't know what's going on in his mind either. Like, I'm not part of this team. Yeah. I don't know. Like, what's going on in there? Like, first of all, I don't understand why he would retire and then come back.
I think he wanted money. I mean, I think he was thinking this is going to be a great leverage play. I'm a big star. They're going to offer me a big contract to come back. And instead, they're like, okay, we're good without you. Like, we move on to the next day. Like, unfortunately, that's the way they do business, it seems.
I will say that, like, you know, like, there are so many hungry fighters out there that there's always a potential next star. So it's hard to hold out on UFC because there's so many hungry guys looking to make a name for themselves that, you know, the UFC's got a better shot of finding someone new than you outlasting UFC. Like, they've got deep pockets. They've got a way to create stars too. You know, they can make things happen. So, you know, playing the waiting game with them is not necessarily, I think, the best idea, but I don't know. That's just my experience.
Yeah. I mean, to each their own. Like, look at Justin Gaethje, right? He was threatening retirement if he didn't get a title fight. It did not seem like that was going for him well at all. And then Ilya Topuria has like a personal issue that pops up and this opportunity comes along. But like, so it did not seem like it was going good for him, you know, but
he got lucky. Listen, just in case you got lucky on that one. Okay. He rolled the dice and it came up seven. I mean, I don't know how the hell that happened. Like, you know, it was cool. It was like, I'm not trying to get involved in the Topuria's thing, but I never expected him to get divorced because the way he was talking about his relationship, you know, it seemed like everything's great. You know, he was talking about having the one and being about her. And it's just like, how can that backfire? I don't know. I have no idea what happened, but it's just like, nobody thought Justin's gonna get a title shot because this guy's having personal issues. It's like, I love the UFC because the most unlikely outcome happens. And like, even me, let's say for me to fight Merab next, just like, it's small chance, very small chance. I get it, but it's cool. It's because like, it's like 18 years ago today, Matt Serra beat GSP, right?
Wow, that's 18 years ago today.
No, not today, but like 18 years ago this year. Sorry, I meant to say 18 years ago this year.
Yep.
And I'm the Matt Serra in this situation. And, you know, Merab comes from Matt Serra. I come from GSP. You know, imagine that 13-1 underdog thing happens the other way around with the other camps. You know, it could be like a crazy story. You never know. Listen, I have my hopes up.
Yeah, well, let's get into it now. That's a perfect segue. Obviously, the UFC 323 headliner is Merab Dvalishvili versus Piotr Jan-2. Merab going for all sorts of history here. These four title defenses in a calendar year. Eight guys have done three. No one has done four. I guess just start there, like the training camps, the fights, just trying to do this. I know you said you loved having three in a 365-day span, but those were not five-rounders. Those are not championship fights. You are not defending a belt. How much more difficult is the position he's entering this fight in? And is there any chance this finally catches up to him and backfires?
I mean, okay, listen, I think like the last point I'm going to go with the last thing you said. It's because only RDR... I think he stopped on the stool in Vancouver because he was doing, I think, his fifth fight in a year. Fifth or fourth fight. I'm not 100% sure. It was either fifth or fourth fight.
It was fifth since his debut, so fifth since October. Fifth within 365 days.
Yeah, which is a lot of fights, man. And it's a lot of weight cuts, you know? So it's not only the training camp. It's also going through the cut. The cut, there's some kind of like, there's a repercussion there that the science doesn't know. Okay, we don't really know. There's no real studies on the long-term problems with weight cutting or benefits, advantages, disadvantages of weight cutting. And like, one thing I noticed is like my weight has been bouncing back higher after the cut, after each cut, like after, let's say, post-fight, like the following weeks, I'm bouncing really high and I got to work more to get back down. And I was like, okay, like I'm starting from a higher number. Am I still going to make the weight? But I ended up making the weight, no problem. It was a non-issue like when it came down to it. But the bounce back was weird. And like, I don't know how if Merab is noticing that too. Like, now that it's going to be his fourth fight in a year, is his weight cut going to be a hindrance for his cardio or his performance? Like, that's my only question. That's my only question about fighting four or five times a year. Just because when it happened, I think that's the only reason why he gassed RDR. I think it was the five weight cuts. I personally think it was the five weight cuts. I don't know. Like, he did well in the beginning, and then he kind of, like, slowed down, and he never really slows down that much. He's not a quitter. He's definitely a winner, man. So, like, I think only thing could be the weight cut. It's, like, my only question mark about it. But besides that, you know, he's always in the gym training. That's what we hear. He's always running. He's always staying in shape. His cardio is incredible. His strength is incredible. His wrestling's through the roof. But I like his humility. Like, he does get rocked often. He does get rocked, like, almost every fight or every other fight. you know, the push kick to the body with Sean O'Malley. It was close. Like, people have a striking chance against him. And I like that he's humble about it and he admits it. I think that's more of a strength that he's aware. He's not delusional. Some people are so delusional that they get battered, you know? So that's like, it's interesting. And Peter Yan is a great fighter, another winner too. And I think he's got a great fight, a better chance of stuffing the takedowns than a Sean O'Malley and a Corey Sandhagen. The only reason why I say that, it's because of height. I think when you're the shorter fighter and you're fighting a guy much taller than you, it's easier to get into his hips. Okay? It's harder for him to get that underhook on you. But when you're fighting a guy closer to your height, getting to his hips a little bit harder. You know? And now, listen, the playbook is out. He's coming to shoot, man. He wants 20 takedowns a fight. He wants them. Like, how could Peter Yan not be preparing for that? Like, it's literally number one priority. Peter Yan should be prioritizing not giving up any takedowns first. That's the first thing. Second thing is, don't get hurt by the strikes. That's number two. It's not number one. Number one is, don't give him any takedowns. Let's not give him a single takedown in round one, two, and three. Let's see what happens then. You know?
Yeah.
Can he do it? I don't know.
Yeah. I mean, that's the big question here. And I mean, the odds makers don't believe so. My bookie right now has Marab at -440 and Yan at +310. I mean, how can Yan make this a different fight? Because you say there, everything, when I hear that, it all sounds great. But to me, stopping the takedowns, don't take the big strike, those all sound like defensive mentality things. What does he do in between those things to actually win the fight and create some offense?
I might be fighting Marab soon, so I can't give away that part.
Yeah, okay, don't give us too much, but maybe how can you make this a different fight? Because we saw it last time. It was a 50-45, almost 50 takedown attempts. He couldn't get anything going. How does he find more paths to success?
I'll tell it to you like this. It's not going to take a lot of strikes to win that fight. It's not. Because Corey got rocked in round two and rocks Marab in round five.
Right.
You know, and he didn't have to hit him a lot of times to rock him. You know, so there is something there. So Yan doesn't have to hit the target that many times, in my opinion. Mm. More importantly, don't get exhausted by the takedowns and the mat returns. And pick your shots so that when you strike, you don't give up the takedown. And find a way to connect. You know, that's basically what it's going to come down to. Can he connect hard enough times to wobble him and still prevent the takedown? That's got to be the general game plan to beat this guy. You know, who can do that? You know, I know Sean O'Malley said he's the guy to beat him. You know, I just think the height difference, it's going to be hard for Sean to stop that takedown. Because how low he has to get to prevent the takedown, it kind of takes away a lot of the punching power and the thing. Whereas Yan doesn't have to get very low. He's already short like Marab. Yeah. So I think it's going to be more comfortable for him to stuff the takedown than it is for Sean O'Malley, who's so tall. I think the height is really going to make this fight closer than people think. You know, and I like that the thing that, you know, if his right hand was really broken and was compromised and he couldn't throw it in the first fight, I don't even think you can consider the first fight as it's going to happen that way. I don't think it's going to happen that way at all. I think Yan is going to have something different. He's going to cook something up. And he's smart enough and he has the finances to hire the right people and to come up with a game plan. He's going to be conditioned through the gills. Look, I love the Corey fight. Like, Corey lost in the most honorable way possible. He came to win every round. You know, he didn't get deterred in any moment. Even when he got hurt, he found a way to scramble back up. He found a way to make it work. And he found a strike in the fifth round. You're going to see that from Yan too. You're going to see that from Yan too.
Yeah, no, that's a fascinating breakdown. I love that insight. And we'll see if Yan can make a difference. I think he's being slept on a little bit in this fight. Yeah. He's so skilled, but Marab is just on such a roll. I mean, how could you pick against this guy? But there's so many unique factors here with the turnarounds and all this stuff, the weight cuts, as you mentioned.
I need Marab to win. Listen, Marab,
you got to win it for me.
Don't win it for you, Marab. Win it for me. Yeah. Win it for AZ.
let's close out on that. I mean, so Marab gets the win here, and you feel there's a very real chance in play that you could get him if he continues to keep up this crazy schedule and your stars will align for March, April.
It's possible. And it also depends who wins in the other fights, because January 24th is a big day for bantamweight division. And depending who wins and how they win, it's not only who wins, it's how does the fight turn out?
Yeah.
You know, Like,
well, I think, I mean, I feel like neither, I mean, O'Malley, obviously not if Merab wins. Yadong, I don't know. Maybe, I don't know. I don't feel like he's jumping ahead of you or the winner of Umar and Davidson, I guess. I don't know, like the Umar, I guess it doesn't really matter. Davidson is a fresh opponent as well, and Umar is going to be out with Ramadan.
Yeah.
Observing that, so.
That's like the Taporia Gaethje thing. You know, it could be like a saving grace in a way. Well, I don't know. We'll see.
Yeah. And what can we angle for this to happen in Canada, or what are we thinking?
I don't know. I mean, yeah, if I could choose, it'd be in Montreal. If I could choose.
Yeah.
You know, I don't think Merab cares. That would be. Merab will fight anybody, anytime, any place. I would fight him too. Like, I'm happy to fight him wherever we're going. But if I had to choose, I would choose Montreal. But I didn't even realize that, like, we got a standing ovation when I fought Aldo till I watched it on tape. Like, I was so high from the fight experience that when I looked into the crowd, I didn't even realize they're all standing. But I think Montreal's got a great crowd, and they would love that fight.
For sure. Awesome, man. Well, I think this puts a great bow on everything. Definitely leaving great analysis, leaving the door open for as fight week goes on here. Things can change. We can see things. People can say things. So it'll be interesting to see how this all goes down once we get on the ground. But thank you so much for being here. I'll see you out there in Las Vegas. Make sure everyone to follow this man, Eamon Zahabi, on socials. And I'm going to take a quick break, and I'll be right back to wrap things up.
Thank you, bro. I appreciate it.
That does it for another edition of the Bonfire Podcast. Thank you so much to Eddie and Eamon for their time, for their insights. Some great stuff there. Very much appreciate that as we kick off UFC 323 Fight Week. Hopefully you guys got some good info and thoughts on everything going on in our sport right now from those two very solid minds. So once again, can't be thankful enough, and also can't be thankful enough to our great producer, Kamikaze Abi Subban, for putting the show together. As always, he's the man, and would be able to do this without him. So that does it for today's show. UFC 323 coverage incoming. Stay tuned to this channel, all the MMA Junkie channels. We'll have a lot going on. We'll have some one-on-one interviews Tuesday from the UFC Apex, media day on Wednesday with 14 fighters, press conference Thursday, weigh-ins Friday, maybe another special little press conference there as well, and then of course the fights on Saturday. So we'll see how this all unfolds, and then be back here next week to talk to you all once again by the Bonfire.